Welcome to The Word at Westminster, a podcast with talks, studies, interviews, sermons, and more from Westminster Church in Barrie, Canada. It's about learning and living God's Word. Welcome, everybody, to this episode of the Pulse Podcast and also The Word at Westminster. And let me just take a moment to introduce my very special guest to us, Dan Scott. He is the minister at St. John's in Bradford, Ontario, and an associate professor at Tyndale University, where he previously served as vice president and academic dean. In 1987, his adventurous spirit took him to China, where he taught ESL to academics. Upon returning to Canada in 1989, after the Tiananmen crisis, he served on the pastoral staff at Knox Church in Toronto. His leadership has connected the church to the wider community, including through special needs camps, a twinning project between local schools and First Nations schools, as founder of the Bradford Ministerial, as a hockey and soccer coach, and by integrating community groups into the life of the church. Dan has served as moderator of the Presbytery of Oak Ridges, as ecumenical observer on behalf of the Presbyterian Church in Canada to the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada's Council of Presidents. At Tyndale University, Dan led the introduction of 8 honors BA programs, and during his term as dean, Tyndale was ranked number 1 for student satisfaction in the university issue of Maclean's magazine, which is surely no small feat. He is a father of 3 and grandfather of 3 and a lifelong Leafs fan. We have that in common. Hey, do you think Matthews is going to win the Rocket Richard this year? I think he's chasing Ovechkin.
That would be great if he did.
Yeah, that'd be great. He has had a number of articles published and is currently serving as the moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Canada. So, Dan, thank you so much for coming on here. And could you just explain, you know, to people who might not know what that is, what a moderator is?
I'd be happy to, and happy to be with you, Matthew. Way down south of in Simcoe County, it's good to read about you, hear about you, and to see your, I think, really wise posts on Facebook and other social media from time to time. Moderator. When I was elected moderator, my son posted on Facebook, my dad's the Presbyterian Pope. And I said, no, we don't really use that kind of language. And he said, but our church pope, people outside the church get pope, they get archbishop. And so I'm going to call you the Presbyterian Pope. But, you know, in Canadian politics, we have 2 roles that are kind of like the moderator. There's the speaker that separates the conservatives and the liberals when they're debating substantive issues. And so the Speaker of the House, there's an element that the moderator does that with our annual meeting. And then the other one is the Governor General, who represents the Queen. In a sense, I represent the Assembly and represent the Church through various ways in Canada and internationally for a year. And then a new moderator comes. And part of the task is to moderate. If it gets hot, turn down the temperature. If it gets cold, maybe warm it up a little.
Oh, thank you. I think that makes a lot of sense. And that helps people who maybe don't know that term and background. So I think that's really good. And just thank you for your leadership. I know that as myself and many others look on and watch you, we just really value your wisdom and your grace. So thank you in that. This is a question I didn't send to you ahead of time. So forgive me for this. Hopefully it's not putting you on the spot too much. But, you know, you're a parent of 3 and a grandparent of 3. What's the biggest difference between a parent and being a grandparent?
You don't have to get up in the middle of the night with grandchildren.
Maybe they cost less.
Well, yes, that's for sure. But it is great fun being a grandparent.
Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting. I hope I'm blessed with the privilege one day. So our talk today centers on the idea of thinking about your trials as joy. And how the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And of course, this comes from, you know, Jesus' half-brother James in chapter 1 of the book that bears his name, verses 2 and 3. Let me read it. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. So previously, you and I were emailing back and forth about some things, and you had said that this verse has special meaning to you because of something that happened when you were young. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it was a momentous event in my life, my family's life, 1970. So it is a long, long time ago. I was, just a young child. And I remember being awakened in the middle of the night to hear screams of fire.
Oh.
And and then hearing a car honking and somebody screaming fire, fire, fire. And then the fire engine sound sirens and everything. And the house that I grew up in and the adjacent neighbor's house had been set on fire by arson. And we shared, it was on a main street in Woodbridge, Ontario. It was the old style of house where my parents had their office on one floor and then the house on top and behind kind of thing. And the adjacent business had a similar kind of thing. And the fire went across the roofs. And so you could see the flames leaping out before it burned down and incinerated the rest of it. And I remember I had three younger brothers, and I might have been 7 or 8 years of age, and a newborn baby, my youngest brother. We were all, I was led by the hand by a firefighter, hopping over the hoses, jumping to get out of the spray. My other brother was on the hand of the other side of the firefighter. A firefighter carried my parents' third child. And then my mom was coming out with the baby. And we were whisked into neighbors' houses, all on the main street of Woodbridge. One brother went to one house. My brother closest in age to me, we went to another house. My parents with the baby went to another house. And in the morning, after, you know, the place was completely burned out. In fact, my parents had a turkey in the sink and it was cooked.
Wow.
My
goodness.
Completely. It lost everything. And early in the morning, before we went to school the next day, it was a different era, right?
Oh my goodness. It snowed an inch last night and the buses are canceled here.
Wow. I know. And I remember my dad gathering my mom and my three younger brothers and I into a bedroom of one of the neighbor's houses. And I don't know how he did it, but he pulled out of his pocket a red Gideon New Testament. And it was probably King James English. And he read those verses you read. And he started at, "My brethren," because it was King James English, "consider it pure joy when you experience divers temptations or fiery trials." And then he read the James passage that talks about the trying of our faith works patience or perseverance. Mm-hmm. But let that perseverance have its perfect work so that you can be perfect and entire, lacking nothing. And then he prayed. I must have memories of it, but I must have heard the stories from my mom and my dad since then. But he prayed, "Our God, thank you for this fiery trial."
Wow.
Knowing that the trying of our faith will work perseverance. And we ask that it have its perfect work. And by the way, we do lack wisdom. That's at least how my dad says it. We're going to ask for wisdom now as to what to do next.
Oh my goodness. Wow. That's an incredible story. So what do you remember? Like, I know it was a long time ago. You said you were 7 or 8, but do you remember what your impression was at the time? You know, not only have you been through this experience, but all of a sudden you're in this house and your father saying this to you.
Yeah. Matthew, it's the kind of thing that I've relived, and I can picture that bedroom in Bill and Nellie Press house. Very, very well. I probably couldn't describe anything else other than that bedroom. And I can remember the red Bible, and I can remember thinking, this is a high and holy moment in a sense, even in the midst of this, families together, everybody's still alive, everybody's still safe. You know, my world hadn't changed because I hadn't even seen the house yet. I'd been asleep. I woke up. Mom and dad are there. My brothers are there. Just feeling safe, secure, loved.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a big question, and I want to ask you how this shaped you as a disciple. Obviously, it has. You can still remember it and everything, but can you share a few thoughts about how through time that has contributed to shaping who you are as a follower, as a person, as a follower of Jesus?
Well, I mean, one of the things I'm not sure how many years after, but I memorized all of James, and particularly James 1, and thought about that circumstance, and you know, the certainly a fiery trial, and consider it pure joy. How do you thank God for a fiery trial? Mm-hmm. And perseverance, how do you work that out? Reflecting on it afterwards, that you may be perfect and entire, lacking nothing, in King James English. And my dad and mom have told me about, you know, some of the provisions that happened almost immediately after. And so for lacking nothing, while the roof was burning, my mom packed all of our clothes. So we had all of our clothes, our snowsuits, boots.
While the fire was raging.
Yeah, up in the
attic, top, yeah.
The false ceilings, etc. So we had all of our clothes, and you know, probably some of our toys. They lost wedding pictures. Very few pictures of me as a baby. All of the, you know, those treasured kinds of things. And my dad, with a group of men, moved everything out of his office, including like an x-ray machine and a whole variety of things. And there happened to be another storefront a couple of doors up the street that was vacant. And so we went back to school. He worked the next day.
Wow.
Because everything was set up. They set it up for him. And he said, we had nothing, like nothing. And he had a cash box on his desk, where his receptionist was, and he opened the cash box, and somebody had come in and paid their account, and there was a $1,000 bill.
Wow.
And he said, you know, that might have been $1 million to us, because it was it was enough to tide us over for the next while. There happened to be a church in the adjacent town, Pine Grove, had an empty parsonage. It was a church that called it a parsonage.
Right, right.
It's where the minister lives.
Yeah.
And they said, you need a place to stay, move in here. The insurance settled, and the insurance payout was enough to cover the down payment for the house that had sat vacant for years,
wow.
Became our family home. So, you know, like that, lacking nothing. Not in a sense that, God always comes to our aid in that way, but in a tangible sense for a kid to know that God provides in such significant ways was remarkable. A lesson in discipleship that I've not forgotten.
Yeah. Wow. So many things. Now, can you just tell me about, like, you talked about your father getting out the Bible and reading that to you, and you're reflecting back on this and provision and in your family there. Like, what was the kind of the feel of the spirituality in your house? Was church a part of it? Was Bible reading kind of collective prayer? How did that feel when you were young?
I mean, I didn't know anything different, to be sure. And so I remember, the school bus honking while my dad would finish reading our daily bread, or when he was reading, we would often read five Psalms a day. Mm-hmm. And on months with 31 days, we would read 119. So the bus would be waiting. a chapter of Proverbs for every day of the month. So, I mean, that was part of the world in which I grew up. And my dad had grown up in the United Church. My mom grew up in the Anglican Church, and my dad had an awakening to faith with his college roommate, who led him to faith, a deeper faith. And that college roommate, he ended up marrying my aunt. And my mom, growing up in the Anglican Church, had a Sunday school teacher or a deaconess or something that was foundational in her life. Mm-hmm. And they were both so excited about their faith And every time the church was open, it seemed like we were there. And even if it wasn't open, we went to morning and evening service, Sunday school service, and the Brethren Church had an afternoon Sunday school. We went to that.
Wow, that's great. You know, you talk about Psalms and Proverbs. I think some of those little Red Gideon New Testaments have Psalms and Proverbs in the back. I wonder if it's one of those editions. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Psalm 119, verse 71, it was good for me to be afflicted so that I might learn your decrees. Interesting, another one of those tough ones. What's the difference between joy and happiness? So we think about that verse from James 1, you know, consider it pure joy. And I think sometimes we can lump these ideas together. Oh, it's something about feeling happy. In your mind, what's the difference between joy and happiness, and how does that help us reflect more comprehensively on what this verse might mean for us?
Yeah, great question. And I wrote a paper when I was in university on for psychology on the difference between peak and nadir, our experiences, or our lowest points. And psychologists say they're about both the same. Your blood pressure rises, you get excited, you get flushed. If you win the lottery, it's not unlike the same physiological experiences that might happen if you lose a loved one, right? You're heightened awareness, you're excited. To answer your question, there's, you know, joy and what's the difference between joy and happiness? Well, happiness comes from the same root word as happens. Happiness happens. It depends on our circumstance. Hmm. I'm happy if I've got a full tummy. I'm happy if I don't run out of gas. I'm happy if I make it to my appointment on time. But happiness happens. And lots of us rely on happiness, but joy is more bedrock stuff. Joy is something that once you've experienced it, even as it seems to be like a vapor and disappears quickly, it's something that you hunger and want more. C.S. Lewis, as you know, wrote his autobiography entitled Surprised by Joy. Lots of people think he was talking about his wife, the American who had the first name Joy. But it wasn't her that was a surprise. It was the joy that Christians have. And that joy in the midst of difficult stuff, where you could still be joyful, maybe not happy, but joyful in the midst of pain and suffering and difficulty, is, as Sheldon Van Auken says in the book, A Severe Mercy, the best argument for Christianity is their joy. Hmm. But the best argument against Christianity is also Christians when they're joyless. They're smug.
Yeah. Sometimes there can be that someone's been robbed of their joy somehow.
Yeah. So joy and happiness, I think there's impressive evidence, says C.S. Lewis, that it's found in Christianity and nowhere else, joy, this quality of joy. Joy of the Lord is our strength. And that ability, even in the midst of the pandemic, I went on, the church sent me to a retreat virtually with church leaders. And the facilitator from the Canadian Council of Churches asked us to describe our joys in the midst of the pandemic. And I tell you, it was so moving to hear, you know, the primate of the Anglican Church talking about experiences that she's having in the midst of the pandemic, and the bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church talking about, with tears running down her face, that she couldn't imagine having joy in the midst of this pandemic because she missed people so much. But she said she was out in the snow and she made a snow angel. And I could just picture this bishop, acting like a child in the midst of this pandemic. And, you know, people talked about the joy that comes from grandchildren and the laughter. Excitement of opening gifts at Christmas time. Someone else talked about the joy of playing with their new puppy. And it wasn't all super spiritual stuff. It was, you know, just the stuff of life. A good meal, time on a porch visit with somebody that you love and just holding their hand. A walk in the woods. But they also talked about spiritual stuff too. Prayer, scripture, and familiar scriptures. It was very, very moving.
I never thought about that thing with happiness, but coming from happens. Yeah, you're so right. Kind of the fluctuating roller coaster. From joy, let's go to the perseverance a bit, because you know you indicated what the King James version that you were read on that decisive morning was patience. So let's go to the value of perseverance, because it comes up time and time again in the Bible, in this passage, but many others as well. So that verse that we referenced talks about, you know, patience. The ESV says steadfastness in that same verse. King James, as you said, patience. The Geneva says that. The NET says, you know, and the CSB say endurance. I looked up in the dictionary, you know, like as a good theological student, and my Luvanita dictionary says this word, you know, it's a capacity continue to bear up under difficult circumstances. I like the phrase bear up because it, you know, implies some fortitude. But so can you share with us what you think James means by perseverance, and whether or not you feel that your trials have been successful at kind of building up that perseverance or patience or endurance in you? Clearly it has, but can you maybe give us some examples?
Yeah, and said it's a fascinating question. I was thinking about this word perseverance. I mean, right in the middle of it, you got the word severe, perseverance, and you know, sometimes fiery trials are severe. Trying of our faith is severe. And the other word that I see is severance. And, you know, like anybody that's had their boss come in and say, "Clean out your desk." And pick up your severance check in the HR department, knows how much that's a fiery trial. That's a difficult situation. And how do you have that fortitude, that ability, that patience, that endurance in the midst of such horrific stuff? It also reminds me of Severus Snape. From Harry Potter. I mean, it's this perseverance in the midst of such difficulty. How do we keep on the faith, right? You know, like when your kid comes to you, or you discover in their drawer that stash is marijuana or something, or your daughter says, "We're pregnant," and you know, you don't even know who the father is. You've not met him or something. But, I mean, those are severe circumstances. And how do you have joy in the midst of that kind of stuff? Or your partner comes and says, "I've got cancer," or "I just don't have enough time or energy to put into this relationship anymore." That, I mean, you don't get more severe than those things. And yet, many faithful people continue in the faith in spite of those things. That's why I think Eugene Peterson, borrowing from, of all places, Nietzsche, or his title on the Psalms of Ascent, of his book, Psalms of Ascent, he says it's a long obedience in the same direction. You know, it's one foot in front of the other when you don't feel like it. I think it was Thomas Merton who, when he was struggling with whether or not he still believed the creed, said, you know, the apostle, "I believe in God, the Father Almighty." Or maybe it was somebody that was talking to him as their priest or confessor. And he said, "Keep saying it till you believe it again. Keep praying.
Yeah.
Give us this day until you believe it again." And I think that same obedience, doing the same stuff, it's like in sports. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to play like Austin Matthews, you know, like you got to still do the basic drills every day.
Yeah.
And don't miss a day.
I was reading something recently, and it was a new study Bible I picked up, and it was talking about the discipline of reading the Bible, and how it was like don't wait until you feel like you're in the mood, make a habit of it, because the Bible sets its own mood. I don't know who that's a quote from, but I think that was helpful, because we're doing practices, things that remind us about what is real, about what is true, and kind of brings us back to that perspective, and that in turn impacts how we react. As you were talking, I thought about, John Leith, the American professor. Hopefully I don't misquote him, because I'm calling from memory here, but he said something like, Christians differ not in what happens to them, but that they respond in faith, hope, and love. Mm. And I thought that was a good thing. So is there a specific example that you might share? This happened to me, and while it was happening, I recall what is true, what is real, and therefore I'm going to react to this differently.
In terms of a personal experience of this patience and suffering, I was in China, as you mentioned in my bio, during the Tiananmen crisis of 1989, and I was under house arrest at the time at the university in which I was teaching, and my American colleague knocked on my door about 2:30 in the morning and said, the tanks have gone in, and there's all kinds of people have been killed and maimed and hurt. And I remember going into the adjoining apartment of my teammate, who was a Canadian, faithful Christian, and just sobbing with him. Sometimes when we go through these really difficult times, to have someone that we trust that's like us, family, friend, loved one, whatever, that you can just hold and share that that pain and provide some comfort in the midst of it. And that's part of the perseverance thing. You can't do it alone. Sometimes we just break down and have to share it with somebody.
So how can we look at what's going around us in this time and consider it pure joy?
Mm-hmm. And that's the rub, isn't it? I mean, this is a fiery trial. This is in my lifetime, your lifetime, probably. We haven't had major wars. We haven't had these big cataclysmic events, but this is the first time. We're separated from everybody. And you got your bubble of your five or your family or the people that are under your roof. Chuck Swindoll's old book, we make two steps forward and one step back, or one step forward and two steps back. But we still have to be just keeping on doing the regular things that Christians have always done. Reading our Bibles, prayer, fellowship with other people, however that fellowship, other believers, most times these days it's virtual. Most times it's, you got a text or you got a Zoom or you got a FaceTime. And I encourage people, and I've been doing this whenever I think of somebody that I haven't seen or I wonder how they're doing, to reach out to them. And oftentimes they've encouraged me as much as I've encouraged them. When I've reached out in the midst of these times, but it seems to me it's just the same drills. If it was hockey, you practice your shots, you practice skating forwards and backwards and stopping and doing all those things every day,
mm-hmm.
every day.
And when we reflect on like Christian practices, things that we have done from for so long, worship, scripture, prayer, these other things. And fellowship is a part of, we do those things with other people. And I think that's part of the difficulty of this time, is because we haven't been able to do that to the same degree. Now, it's come and gone, and hopefully we're getting back to a place for that. But the role of other people in doing those things with fellowship is so valuable, and serving and helping other people. Like when you were talking about that original experience with your house, woven into that story is, the people who helped financially, is the people who brought you into their home, the people who helped to move the furniture and from your dad's office to the new one. It's just amazing how this is an experience you had, and it impacts your perspective, your faith, your relationship with God, but at the same time, other people had a real active role to play in kind of that memory for you. So I think that's part of the risk and difficulty of this time is that can be limited in some ways, and really we kind of lose out from it.
Yeah, and to recognize that some of those people that help us and when we're in difficult times may not be fellow believers. Mm-hmm. They could be just people standing about, neighbors, people that get awakened in the middle of the night and want to help.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
You letting them help you is a tremendous benefit for them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like Jesus at the well with the woman, give me a cup of water. He let her help him first. Mm-hmm. Before he even helped her, kind of thing. And sometimes letting someone help you, even if they're outside of your faith, is a means of grace in their lives.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time, Dan, here today. I appreciate it. I appreciate not only this, but also your leadership in the wider church. Thank you. We'll continue to pray for you as you finish out your moderatorial year in the PCC. But as a final thought, could you maybe share a few words with someone, maybe someone who right now feels like this is really tough. I'm not sure I can get through it. They feel like they're, kind of drowning a little bit. What message and encouragement would you have for that person?
Yeah, the sun also rises. We will get out of this, and the promise of our risen Lord, I'll be with you always, even till the end of COVID-19. I'll be with you always, even to the end of your days. I'll be with you always, even till the end of this age. And we're not alone. That God promises. The risen Christ promises, I'll be with you by my spirit, and I'll comfort you. I'll give you that gift of forbearance and patience as the fruit of the spirit. And I'll be with you. I'll be with you.
Thank you. That's a really good word. We'll close it out with James 1, beginning at verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you.